Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. One more day, and it does feel like a daily countdown. 5 days, 4 days, one more day now. Boston City Councilors Michelle Wu and Anissa Saibi-George are in the home stretch, each hoping that their final 24-hour sprint will carry them across the finish line as the next mayor of Boston, the first woman mayor of Boston, the first person of color to be mayor of Boston. Now, here with us to talk about the campaign and what they'll be watching most closely tomorrow, two guests that have been following along with us on this for a while now, WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks and Boston Globe reporter Megan Irons. Anthony, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Nice to be here.
And Megan, thanks to you too.
Great to be here. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Megan. Good to hear you.
So, Anthony, you are out and about today. Just tell us a little bit about what you've been seeing.
Well, I've been sort of trying to catch up with both candidates. So I was with Michelle Wu about an hour ago. She was in Chinatown at the Chinatown Gate, and she sort of held one of her, will probably be more or less her last press conference there before tomorrow's election. And she said Chinatown for her, was a place that meant a lot to her when she said she was a homesick college kid from out of town. And Chinatown was the community that sort of took her in and provided familiar food and people and culture. And so it's always meant a lot to her. So that's where she was. And the message, as you might expect, was despite being ahead in the polls, the only vote that matters is the vote tomorrow. And so she's making a direct appeal to her supporters to get out and vote. Anissa Saibi-George, I just spoke with her minutes ago here in Roxbury. She was touring the Horizons for homeless children. She's been on the run for like 24 hours straight. She started at midnight last night and plans to go right through midnight tonight, just hitting all kinds of all parts of the city. With a concentration, I would say, in Boston's black community, which is important to her because her strength is primarily in whiter neighborhoods, more conservative neighborhoods, older neighborhoods. And if she's going to climb this steep hill toward victory, she's got to rally support in other parts of the city. So that's where we're at. And her message, very much the same. It ain't over till it's over. She's working hard until all the votes are counted.
So, Anthony, thanks for that kind of a picture of today. Megan, I'm about to turn to you, but I want to invite listeners into this. Election day in lots of places around the Commonwealth tomorrow, including Boston. Are you voting? What are you showing up for? What's your issue? Why are you going to the polls? And what's most important to you to see happen Wednesday, when the election, whatever it is over? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Join this conversation. Reflect with us today. So, Megan, voting is the thing on everyone's minds. And I want to ask a little bit about how much this race in Boston is going to come down to who gets more of their base to turn out. I understand the distance in the polls among likely voters in the last couple of polls between Michelle Wu and Anissa Saibi-George. I also know we've heard some concerns about potentially low voter turnout, given how historic this race is. So put that in perspective.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there, Tiziana. The Secretary of State, Galvin, today just said that turnout is expected to be about 135,000 people. That's about 31% of the people who are registered to vote. So it's going to be another low turnout event, which is very surprising given the slate of candidates that we have right now, two historic candidates running for mayor to be the first woman of color. And the enthusiasm isn't as strong across the city. You are seeing, as Anthony was talking about, Michelle Wu in Chinatown and Anissa Saibi-George making a 24-hour sprint to the finish line. But there have been also some negative turn in the campaign, one would say, in terms of the super PACs that have been involved in the race thus far. One is paid for by Bostonians for Real Progress, independent expenditure PAC, which supports Anissa Saibi-George and is claiming that Wu got a sweetheart deal on her Roslindale home. It's an assertion that has been looked at by The Globe and other news organizations and have been found to not be credible, but it is still playing. And the Asabi George supporters are hoping that things of this nature might move people who are on the fence. But Tiziana, I don't think there's going to be a lot of surprises tomorrow. As much as we hope for an exciting race, I think the based on the experts that I've talked to anyway, that the polls have shown that the wind is shifting towards Michelle Wu. And unless Anissa Asabi George makes serious headways in those wards, 18, 14, 12, which is which are in the heart of the Black community, and unless she expands her base, the outcome is going to be very similar to what we saw in the preliminary election.
Okay.
This race, in as much as it is about the issues, is about organization. It's about your ground game. It's about your connections to the people. And what we've seen thus far is that Michelle has been doing this. Michelle Wu has been doing this for a lot longer than Anissa Asabi George.
So just a couple of notes there. First, Secretary Galvin says he's expecting about 30% voter turnout in Boston. Anthony, I want to pick up on this ad, this super PAC-funded ad that Megan just talked about. And in to be fair, Anissa Asabi George has asked the PACs to stand down. Also, though, this ad runs over the weekend after we see Asabi George make a similar accusation in a debate since the preliminary election. So kind of pick up on that and what role that outside spending, these campaign ads are playing, especially in these final hours, before Election Day.
About this super PAC ad, and she said, well, you know, I can't communicate directly with the super PAC, so I really, it's their business and I have to just focus on the issues. And I said, but, you know, you can stand here and talk to me and say you want them to take it down and you don't support it. I mean, you know, what about a public statement? And she said, well, I've made plenty of public statements on that and I'm not going to make any more. In terms of the content of the ad, I mean, this is an issue that she brought up in the debate. And for listeners who don't know what the issue is, I mean, I'll sum it up and Megan can probably chime in and fill in some holes that I leave. But basically, the thrust of the ad is so Michelle Wu had a friend from law school. They bought a house in Roslindale together. A few years later, Michelle bought her out. The Boston Globe looked into that. They bought her out at fair market value. This friend's father is a Republican donor, so the super PAC has made much of this fact. But, you know, honestly, it looks to me like a pretty clear and fair real estate transaction that Michelle Wu was involved in. As I said, I think the Globe did some great reporting on this that said that she bought the house back from fair market value. And if the folks who are supporting Asabi George are trying to make an issue that the father is a Republican donor, well, so what? I'm not really sure that how much traction this ad has, and it doesn't seem like it has a whole lot of substance. That said, there is some rancor on this final day of campaigning. Michelle Wu said she was really disappointed about it. Talked about the kind of divisiveness that we're seeing at the national level, and really made an appeal directly to Asabi George's campaign to cut it out, that this isn't helping the cause of sort of getting people to engage on the issues. But here we are. This is where we're at. And
yeah.
Other than that, I agree with everything that Megan said about the dynamics of the race that really seem to be favoring Michelle Wu at this late day. We're talking about four major polls over the last two or three weeks that show her with a sizable advantage.
So 1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. Do you pay attention to political ads? Do the flyers that come in your mail swing who you're voting for? What's your plan in going to the polls tomorrow? And by that, I mean, what's the issue or the set of issues that are motivating you on this election day? Do you think turnout's going to be high in your community? We'd love to hear from you. Again, that's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. So, Megan, I'm thinking a little bit about the city council races. I'm remembering 2 years ago seems like 700 years ago right now, but I'm remembering the last round of city council races. There was a ton of energy around that race. And here we're really so focused on this historic mayoral race. But is there anything going on in those city council races in Boston that you think has some sway over the overall outcome here?
You know, I don't know if they have a lot of sway in the overall outcome, but they're nonetheless, I think, extremely exciting, at least for me. You're looking at the large council race where there are eight people seeking four slots. The polls have shown that the two incumbents, Michael Flaherty and Julia Mejia, who won, by the way, a couple years ago by just one vote.
One vote.
One vote. And so I, you know, based on the polls, it looks as though those two will go, you know, will be reelected. But there is a dynamic fight right now with four charismatic people running for two of those four seats. They include David Halbert, who ran in 2019. He used to be a campaign staffer at City Hall and on Beacon Hill. Erin Murphy also ran in 2019, a former BPS teacher for more than 20 years. There's Carla Montero, a social worker. And the last person is, help me out, Anthony. I can't remember the last person.
Sorry, I can't help you.
Did you say Ruth Z? Did you say Ruth Z? Did I miss it?
Ruth Z. Oh my gosh, how could I forget? I saw her face, but could right. not say her name out loud. I hope she forgives me. Ruth Z. Lugien. She is a Haitian immigrant and a lawyer who worked on the Elizabeth Warren presidential campaign. These are dynamic, fantastic representatives who decided to step up and jump into this race. And they're bringing a lot of energy, you know, into the race, into the contest, and across the city. And so, but there are only four slots for this particular at large seat. And not just that, you're looking at District 6, which has gone pretty nasty between Kendra Hicks and Mary Tamer, and the race in District 4 is also pretty engaging as well. So across the city, you're seeing a lot more diversity, a lot more energy, and a lot more interest in the folks that are jumping into the race right now and could possibly energize more people to turn up at the polls tomorrow.
So, Anthony, I'm sorry, like five thoughts crashing at once, because I do want to leave a little room, and I will, for us to talk about the transition. But even before the transition, we are talking about a huge group of new people, both in the city council. And while we have two existing city councilors running for mayor, there will be a new person in the mayor's office and a very clear set of issues that have been front of mind in this election. And I'm sort of imagining the pulsing energy of newness coming out of City Hall once this election is over. What do you think the big defining issues over the next 6 months are likely to be coming out of City Hall?
Well, I mean, you sort of have to think about them separately, depending on who wins. I mean, I think the big sort of challenge immediately is it's good to remind listeners here that they have 2 weeks for this transition, which is an extraordinarily compressed time frame.
Yes.
I asked Michelle Wu about that today, and she made the point that, look, if she wins and she's expecting, she's talking about winning, she's familiar with a lot of the faces in City Hall. And as someone who has run four times and won in City Hall before as an at-large candidate, she knows her way around City Hall. So that gives her a bit of a head start. Still, it's a big challenge, because not only does she have to focus, or whoever wins, has to focus on putting a new team together, they also have to run the day-to-day. So that's the initial challenge. Then there's the big challenge, I think Michelle Wu and actually Asaibi George talked about it just moments ago, is focusing on the crisis at the intersection of Massachusetts Avenue and Melnia Cass Boulevard, so-called Mass and Cass, that crisis of addiction and homelessness. That's going to press on them. And then I think, you know, the reality of turning a sort of aspirational campaign into, you know, the nuts and bolts of everyday governing is going to hit pretty hard. And I'm thinking now of Michelle Wu promising things like free public transportation and rent control. Well, that's going to, you know, involve a lot of negotiation with state legislators because she doesn't have control over that. I'm thinking about efforts to relocate, for example, reallocate resources from the police department elsewhere. That's going to collide with vested interests in the form of a very powerful police union and their backers. Yeah. So we're going to, you know, very quickly, we're going to be introduced to this powerful transition where aspirational campaigning meets the sort of hard rubber of the road of what it means to govern in a city where there are lots of entrenched interests.
And Megan,
the new mayor has to pick a new police commissioner, right? Because we saw the controversy that emerged after Dennis White was named by former Mayor Walsh as the police commissioner and all the stuff that came out about his background and his previous marriage, allegations of domestic violence. And he was summarily dismissed by acting Mayor Kim Janey. Whoever becomes the next mayor will have to decide who will lead this department, as well as to come up with all the different reforms that have been promised so far in the campaign trail.
So Wednesday, hopefully we know who the next mayor is, Anthony. What's the order of business on Wednesday? Will anything, I know this is naive, but will anything feel different Wednesday, Anthony? And what's the order of business?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sort of perplexed. Megan put her finger on the issue really well. I mean, it doesn't seem to be a huge amount of excitement across the electorate here, but this is hugely consequential. I mean, we keep stressing this. 200 years of white male mayors is about to give way to, you know, an extraordinary development for the city of Boston and, might I say, an overdue development. So I think there'll be on Wednesday a lot of excitement among, you know, folks who supported one of these two candidates and certainly among people who follow politics like us. You know, and I think there's going to be this moment to exhale and sort of celebrate this transition, this historic transition in Boston. But then, you know, not to repeat what I said, I think the focus is going to shift very, very quickly to governing, and they don't have a lot of time. You know, it's not like electing a president where you have a 3-month interregnum to sort of, you know, go body surfing on Nantucket before you take office or whatever it would be. So that's my feeling, that there's going to be a moment when of kind of a sense of celebration on Wednesday, and then it's going to dissipate pretty quickly, and the new mayor is going to have to get down to business very, very quickly. And I suspect that the crisis at Mass and Cass is going to take up a lot of oxygen. I think Megan's right, the search for a new police commissioner. Michelle Wu was asked about that today. That's going to take up a lot of oxygen, and there we are.
So, Megan, we have about a minute left. Any other big question that you're really watching over the next 24 hours or even 2 weeks?
Oh, that's a great, great question. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I will add to what Anthony is saying in terms of some of the big issues that the next mayor will face. And that, I think, is the schools. And is this year two of the pandemic? There's a superintendent that, you know, is controversial depending on what community you are in. And so in addition to the other myriad things that the next mayor must tackle, Mass and Cass, a new police commissioner dealing with the police contracts, and all the other things she must also contend with, how to fix our schools and deal with some of the learning losses and some of the major issues that came about as a result of the pandemic. And it's just going to be a hard trial by fire, one will say, for the next mayor, because there isn't a lot of turnaround time. And so there's going to be a lot of on-the-job learning moving forward.
All right. That is Boston Globe reporter Megan Irons and WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Megan, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Anthony, thanks to you, too.
Always a pleasure, Tiziana.
So we just spent a lot of time talking about that Boston election, but voters in 55 communities across Massachusetts will be taking part in municipal elections tomorrow. A year after record-breaking turnout in the national election, though, interest in the local elections is more subdued, especially outside of Boston. WBUR's Steve Brown has more from one of the many other cities where the polls will be open.
We're just days away from a municipal election here in Union Square in Somerville. For the first time in 18 years, the mayor's office is up for grabs with the incumbent, Joe Curtatone, stepping down at the end of his term. But looking around, you have very little sense there's an election coming up. There are no campaign signs to be seen, and while some folks may be engaged, others like Stuart Price admittedly haven't been paying much attention.
I more follow the presidential midterms more closely than the local stuff. If I vote this election, I'll probably vote my party.
All around the state, election officials say enthusiasm for the local races is down considerably from a year ago, when the pitched battle between Donald Trump and Joe Biden drove record numbers of voters to the polls.
I don't really think there'll be a mad rush. I think it'll be a fairly low turnout. I'm predicting roughly about 18%, which is rather low and dismal.
Cynthia Scrivani is the executive director of elections in Brockton, where the incumbent mayor is running for re-election. She says she's disheartened more people aren't getting revved up over this year's contest.
It's very sad when they come out and you get an 80% turnout for a presidential, and you're lucky if you get a 20% turnout in a local election, when your local officials are the officials that you can actually talk to and get changes done in your neighborhood. So it's very disheartening to see that people don't come out to vote for their local officials.
Local elections also draw fewer people in Lynn, where incumbent Mayor Tom McGee is stepping down. Nearly two-thirds of Lynn voters turned out for the 2020 election, but the city's municipal elections usually draw less than half that amount. And this year, just 3% of registered voters have requested vote-by-mail ballots. One reason for the lower turnout is local elections are usually held separately from national and state elections, which have better-known candidates. Local campaigns also don't have as much money to spend, says UMass Amherst political science professor Jesse Rhodes.
There's a lot less ability of candidates at the local level to get people in the field, to remind people about when the elections are going to occur, to try to mobilize voters. And so all of this combines to mean that there's just, when the elections are held off cycle, that people are less likely to be fired up and mobilized and energized about those contests.
Some say another reason for the tepid interest is a lack of local media coverage. The biggest news organizations in the region have focused most of their attention on the race for mayor in Boston, and many local outlets have limited resources, forcing candidates to scramble for attention.
I'm Katiana Ballantyne. I'm running for mayor of Somerville.
Back in Somerville, the candidates have turned to public access television to make their pitches. The chain that owns Somerville's main weekly newspaper closed its Somerville office 5 years ago and reduced its staff. But Kat Powers of the Somerville Media Center says she hopes to raise money to reinvigorate local journalism here. She and Media Center board member Jason Premis have started the Somerville Media Fund.
We know that there is a news desert forming here in Somerville. He and I have come together to form a nonprofit that we are looking to fund journalism that covers the city of Somerville and elections like we're seeing right now.
Powers hopes providing more local news will lead to a more informed electorate and more exciting elections in future years. In the meantime, voters can still do their part. Polls will be open tomorrow from 7 in the morning until 8 at night.
That report from WBUR's Steve Brown.